Yes, can you hear us?
I hope you like that meme I made of you earlier. Alright, so the floor is yours. If you'd like to.
Oh, okay, cool. Awesome. So, I can't see anything. It's very bright out here. So I'm hoping you can actually see me. I think I can see me in the little corner there. But, folks, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy for the video of me to be in front of you in Maryland for the Maryland Libertarian Party Convention. We were originally hoping that I'd be able to be there, and unfortunately, timing didn't allow it. But I was born in Maryland, in Baltimore, actually. States I haven't campaigned in yet, so we need to get me into Maryland sooner than later. But before I get started, I just want to ask you to give yourselves a round of applause for being involved in the Liberty Movement, coming out, taking out this time on your weekend to be able to work together and grow the message of liberty and grow this party and work to set the world free in our time. Give yourselves a round of applause. I can't hear anything, so I'm just kind of subsiding slightly. Folks, what I wanted to talk about briefly is we're all here for the same reason. And when I say we're all here, I mean I'm 1,000-plus miles away from you, and you're sitting where you are for the same reason. We want to set the world free in our time. We want to end the Fed. We want to end the wars overseas. We want to end the war on drugs. We want to end all of this. All the things that we talked about, all the reasons that we're here. I see all of you. You look fantastic, by the way. We're all here for the same reasons. We want to see an end to the cult of the omnipotent state. We want to see people being released from cages and camps. We want to see the troops coming home and the wars ending. We want to see the Federal Reserve ending so that we can see a return to serious and sane monetary policy. We want to see an end to taxation, because it's none of the government's business or anyone else's how much money you're earning, and we know that all they do is waste on a bunch of garbage anyway. By the way, I just saw someone applauding. Don't let the fact that I'm going to continue talking stop you from applauding at any time. Thank you. Those are our goals. That's what we want to accomplish. That's why we're here. And it gets frustrating very often when we are getting ahead as fast as we like to. I can tell you personally myself, I used to, I'm not sure what's happening with the camera right there. There we are. Last year I ran for vice president, and I ran with George Jorgensen, and we went across the country, and we spread the message of liberty as far and wide as we could. We came to states across the country, including Joe coming from Maryland, to talk about candidates that are running locally and talk about our campaign and talk about why Americans do best when they're most free. And I'll tell you something, there were few people that were disappointed as much as me when we only got, 1.2%, 1.3%, whatever it was. What was interesting to me was what happened afterwards. The following day, I had people contact me to congratulate me on getting 1.3%. I thought, well, that's interesting. And I said, well, hey, thank you. Why are you congratulating me? And they'd say, oh, well, you know, it's the second highest number of votes that we've ever gotten. It's the highest number of votes that we've ever gotten during an election season where a president is running for re-election. We had nearly 50% growth in paid members of the Libertarian Party. We had a double-digit increase in the number of people that are registered as libertarians across the country. These are all fantastic things. I said, yeah, no, that's great stuff. The party's done a great job doing this. Why are you congratulating me? We got the 1.2%. And they said, well, you know, you guys did a great job being around to share the message. And, you know, the media is blacking you out. And, you know, you're not able to get on the debate stage. I thought, you know, nothing you're saying is untrue. But then I realized something. Somewhere along the way, and I'm sure it started as a very healthy coping mechanism, that's when you consider the fact that our party started 50 years ago now, this year, coming up on our 50th anniversary, started 50 years ago in someone's living room in Denver. and has grown into a political party. Somewhere along the way, I think what started as a healthy attempt to cope with the fact that these much larger parties were just towering over us and everyone else and making it nearly impossible for us to be able to compete. I think what started as coping turned into nesting. And I think what started as a healthy appreciation of the odds that faced us turned into a culture of losing. And I think that we, if we are going to make that next step as libertarians, I think that we need to put that aside. I think we are outside of our entry level, and we are now ready. It's time to put aside the era of losing admirably and move into an era of winning. Now, obviously, I think what it means is we have to look at why we haven't won yet. I've been in business for nearly 25 years. Every time I say that, I feel like how old I am. Nearly 25 years I've been in business, and what I have learned in all that time of being in business and being involved in, I don't even remember how many startups at this point that I've worked with, both directly and indirectly. And one thing that I've learned in all of that is that when you fail, or when you lose, or when you fail to accomplish whatever your goal was, there are a couple ways you can go with it. You can either learn from the mistakes of what happened, learn what you can control out of what happened, what you can't control, and focus on what you can control so that you can retool and do better the next time. You can ignore what happened and just continue plowing through the way that you've been doing it, or you can look for the things that you had no control over, ignore the things that you did have control over, and say, that's why we didn't get anywhere, and then continue plowing forward that way. That's what losing looks like. If we don't win, we can still learn and win in the future. And I think if at the same time, we are winning elections across the country at the local level and the regional level, things like city council races, county council races, state legislative races, and so forth, I think we're losing the forest for the trees. If we can learn from where we aren't winning, the things that we do have under our control, and if we can learn from where we are winning, and the things that are working to actually get us elected, to get libertarians into office, then I think that that's probably the best way to move forward. Now, we've seen all the polling that shows that, I think most recently, anywhere between 60 and 65% of Americans want a new viable third party to vote for. And we get real excited when we hear that. We go, that's great news. We're the Libertarian Party. We're a viable third party. You can vote for us. And they look for and look at us and they go, hey, wait, like I was saying, when they see us, they don't see what they're actually saying that they're looking for. What they're saying they're looking for is a ready-made party that they already feel like can win right now, with or without their vote. Now, that's not the most frustrating damn thing you're going to hear all day long, because how are we supposed to be able to win if they don't vote for us? We can have that argument all day long. We can also look at what the main narratives and reasons why they choose not to vote for us are. Number one, like I said before, they say, you can't win. Well, that's a hard one to fight. But here's the next thing they say. Well, your ideas look good, but how do I know this isn't just a pipe dream? How do I know these ideas are actually going to work? And then the next thing that they'll say is, why do I only hear from you for a few weeks or a few months right before election day every 4 years? And if they have heard of us, because a lot of times they haven't even heard of libertarians, but if they have heard of us, they often say things like, well, I always see you guys arguing with everyone, including yourself. Well, some of those are unfair accusations, but some of them are kind of fair accusations, or at least there's a ring of truth to them. The cool thing is that we have the answer to how to fix all of those things. And it starts with what you're actually doing right now. We need to get more involved in our local communities. We need to get more involved in our local affiliates. We need to get more involved with getting libertarians elected at the local level, the races that we're able to win right now with the resources that we have. And we need to give libertarians, both online and in person, actionable goals that they can work towards. Growing local affiliates, increasing membership, working towards specific initiatives in their cities and in their communities, getting involved with different charity and mutual aid initiatives and things like that in their area, park cleanups, soup kitchens, feeding the homeless, whatever they can do outside of electoral politics as libertarians to get out there in front of the community, getting behind candidates who have a viable path to win races, city and county and state legislative races. When we do all of these things, you kill every narrative that's being built against us by reason, why they can't vote for us. You can't win. Yeah, you're doing it. We're winning races across the country. Your ideas sound like a pipe dream. No, they're working in cities and counties and state legislatures across the country. They're actually the best ideas you're hearing right now. I only hear from you for a few months every 4 years. No, that's not true at all. I'm hearing from you. You're hearing from us all the time in these different races and in your communities and in your city councils and county councils. All I ever see you do is fighting. No, you see us kicking butt up and down the country in your cities and your communities and everything else. We kill the main narratives, and also, again, by giving libertarians something to do. We're no different than anyone else. If we don't have anything to do, and if we all have the same aspirational goals, but we don't have a blueprint for how to get there, very often we end up just looking for a reason why we're not getting anywhere. We start nesting, we start attacking each other, and of course, familiarity breeds contempt, so we attack the people closest to us. We're attacking fellow libertarians. It's your fault you're not winning. It's, you know, you said this, or you tweeted that, or you liked this person, or you don't like that person, and that's the reason that libertarians never win. We actually talk when we show about, you know, oh, that's the reason libertarians never win, but then we turn around and tell a libertarian that they're why we don't win. When we don't have actionable things to work towards, that's inevitably what's going to happen. So, you know, what you are doing right now is so crucial to what we need to do moving forward. And, you know, the candidates that are going to step up to run for those offices in the local areas and in the cities and counties, those are the candidates that we are going to be able to work with to be able to get them elected. It's still important that we have the national races. It's still important that we have the big statewide races because it gives us an opportunity to get in front of as many people. But I think that the most important thing that we should be focusing on and directing our resources to and our attention and time and energy to is to those races where, yeah, they only need to knock on a couple hundred doors. They only need to get in front of a few hundred or a few thousand voters and they can win their race. I think when we focus on that, that's the beginning of building a culture of winning. When we work together towards common goals of getting libertarians elected, not only are we killing all the reasons that they say that they can't vote for us, but we're killing all the reasons internally for why we're often not winning in races that we have a much better shot of winning. So the last thing I'll leave you with before I open up to Q&A, if we're able to do some Q&A, the last thing I want to leave you with is when it feels like things are hopeless. And that can happen a lot. You know, you'll often be in a Facebook group or in a meeting or you'll go to a local affiliate meeting and there'll only be a handful of people there or you'll only see a few people that are watching a libertarian show or podcast. And you may think, you know, we're so poor outnumbered, things are so tough. But here's the thing. If you look at any major movement that ever was sold, in people being free or moving up, the movement that led to the Magna Carta, the movement that led to the abolition of slavery, the movement that led to the ending of prohibition. Any of these things started with small groups of people that were seemingly hopelessly outnumbered, even smaller groups that I'm looking at right now, handfuls of people who didn't care what the odds were. They didn't care how hopeless it sounded. They didn't care how much they were being told they didn't have a shot in hell of getting anywhere. They didn't care how much it looked like the chips were stacked against them. They didn't care how much danger they may be in, because they knew that the only alternative to continuing to fight and to struggle until they won was to simply shrug their shoulders and say, well, I guess it's always going to be this way. These were always the strong and determined few that when they accomplished their goals, we now look at them as the trailblazers and the pioneers and the people, the heroes, that were the beginning of the movement to end whatever bad thing they were fighting against. And that's you. When we win the White House, when we win Congress, when we win our state houses, when we set America free, when we begin a domino effect of setting the world free, when we end the wars, when we end the wars on victimless crime, when we set people free from hate, when we allow people's lives to be much better, when we get government out of things like healthcare and housing and education so those things can improve and the cost can become affordable again, we accomplish all the goals that we wanted. when we are freer and we are happier and healthier and safer as a result, future generations are facing a much brighter future than we could have ever imagined. It will be you that people will point at and say, these were the trailblazers. These were those stubborn, cantankerous libertarians who simply wouldn't take no for an answer and kept pushing forward until they set America free. So I just want to say I'm honored to be working with you. I'm honored to be in this fight with you. Now let's go build that culture of winning and let's go start making some serious wins. I would be happy to take a few questions, and again, I thank you so much for coming.
All right, thank you. Hey, Spike, can you hear us?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There.
All right,
yeah.
So, open up for Q&A. Anyone? Have anything?
Hey Spike, when do you think libertarians are at their best?
When do I think libertarians are at their best? I feel like the way that was asked that I shouldn't have an answer that everyone already knows. I think libertarians are at their best. So I'm going to give my real answer, but this is like when someone once asked me what the scientific method was, and I gave like this 10-minute long answer about it, and I realized that it was actually like a meme that was going around. So I think that libertarians are at their best when they are up against the wall and facing the most conflict and struggle. And you see it when it's time to fight for ballot access, right? We have to, Herculean task of getting on all 50 state ballots at a time when, it's so exceedingly difficult to be able to even do that. And yet we've managed to do it. A few election cycles in a row now, we've managed to do that. The one where we didn't get it, we came so close to getting them. And when you think about, when you look back and you think about just the sheer amount of time and effort that has to be put into such a thing, and the fact that we're able to do that, I think we do best when we are given some serious, difficult goals, but have an actual blueprint path for how to do it, and we're able to thrive. Because we're the people that say we don't want or need government in our lives. We'll figure it out ourselves. We'll work voluntarily with each other to be able to do it. We're the ones saying that even at a time when government's working actively to try to make us dependent on them. And that just speaks to our spirit and our determination. So I think we do best when we are the most are given a very big but still achievable goal and given a blueprint for how to do it. And that's really what we're trying to work for, is having more of those.
We got any more questions?
Oh, yeah, real quick.
Step on up.
Yeah. All right. Spike!
Can you hear us?
Can you hear it?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Yeah. Ready?
Back home around.
Oh, shit. Dude, thank you for coming to Reading, PA. Thank you for the ballot access, everything, boogaloo. But when are you coming to Kyle O'Donnell's house for the crappies in Maryland? And lots of crabs in Maryland. That's all we want to know. What is happening?
Okay, first of all, you had me at crabs. You can take the guy from Maryland, but you can't take away his gravity. I think he's more than happy to come down there. We need to make that work sooner than later, because I will eat an obscene amount of crap. Around Maryland right now, but the reality is, like, if you see the sheer amount of shellfish I can put back, first of all, being Jewish, I'm not even supposed to do it. But as you watch it when you do this, it goes from, wow, that's incredible, like, wow, you must be 100, especially, like, is everything okay? let's make that my work, man. I would be happy to do it. I would must have so many crowds to do it, but she had invited me.
Yeah! Okay, hi Spike. Question is, do you have any suggestions as to how one induces a state party to recruit bottom of the ticket candidates?
You broke up briefly, but I think I understood what you said. You're asking how the state parties can work to recruit candidates to run for those ballot races, local races, and things like that. But, well, I think first of all, that was the question.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, I think that, first of all, this is a great place to start right here. I think that there are more than a few people here who, if presented with some good opportunities for races that can be won, that they will be able to run for those races. I don't know specifically, you know, Maryland set up the local government, but if it's like the vast majority of the state, there are probably at least a couple dozen races across the state that have little to no competition, where you can either walk in and seal the victory just by getting on the ballot, or with a little bit of elbow grease and, you know, knocking on a few dozen or a couple hundred doors, you can get those races run in a pretty easy way. There's something in Pennsylvania, in your neighboring state, they're called the Bolton maneuver, and they have used it very, very successfully to win dozens of races in their state. Now, I know Pennsylvania is set up in such a way that there's a lot of different layers of government, which means there's a lot of often NPCs that are out there, but that can be replicated in other states. So I think the biggest thing that the state, the local affiliates can do is sort of a, if you build it, they will come mentality of find and identify those races, and if there isn't already someone that's ready to run for those, start talking to the people in your local affiliates and in your state affiliates and say, hey, listen, we've got a race, and we, you know, looking at previous vote counts or vote totals, we think that we can do this, you know, with a relatively modest budget, a relatively low number of votes, and, you know, if you're ready to get into this race, and, you know, we can come up with the two, three main issues you're going to run on, and all of you will be effective way to be able to run campaigns in that area. I think you're going to get a lot of people that are, I talk constantly with libertarians who go, I think I want to run for something, I don't know what do I even do? And my answer is always, listen, I don't live for what you do, but you know, reach out to your local and state affiliate and see what's out there to give them a run for, see what the main issues in that area are, and you know, come up with your talking points on those issues and keep your messaging disciplined. And, you know, one thing I've noticed is a lot of, once you start running in these local races, it's a lot easier to run in a local race and get local media attention, especially if you're willing to take a tough stance on hot button issues in your area. It's relatively easy to get in front of local media. Far easier than it was for me and Joe to get on national media, because local media is often just trying to fill slots for their 7 o'clock and 11 o'clock hour. So if you can give them something, more often than not, they'll give you some attention. So, but I think what the state and local affiliates can do, the best thing you do is look for those races first, and then that way you can go to the membership in that local area and in your state and say, hey, listen, we're looking for people to run in this race. This is what we think it's going to take. And if you're able to put that much commitment and time into it, we think we can get you elected to this. I think that's a good way to move forward.
One more question.
One more.
Here we go. We got one more.
Are you wearing
Pace Bike, Dan? You know, we're wondering that mixtape, what Liberty songs are on the mixtape?
Yeah!
Where's the mixtape?
So, thank you, Rabbi. Have you ever briefly mentioned something hypothetically on your podcast for like 2 seconds and it becomes viral on the internet? So here's which is what happens with viral stuff. So imagine, for those of you, and you can show of hands, who here remembers what late 90s and early 2000s hip hop and rap was like?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, the reason that a lot of people aren't raising their hands is because they do remember the late 90s and early 2000s. So now imagine that you're, I don't know, hypothetically, a national public figure within a major political party. You're ran as, I don't know, the vice presidential candidate for the third largest political party in the country. Now everyone's waiting for you to release a mixtape that is very, very vulgar. That would be the last thing that any political party would want to have. And Because again, it is rap and hip hop and it is entertainment, but then there's a difference between, you know, just some guy releasing his or her mixtape, or, you know, a former VP candidate who is releasing a mixtape that probably has the N word in it like 3,000 times. And how do you thread that needle? And you go, well, hey, it's okay because they said it. So this is I hope maybe I've painted a picture of the predicament that I'm in right now. I technically did release a track from my mixtape a couple weeks ago, but it was like a joke track that started the tape was like from a cartoon, Adult Swim cartoon. So I did technically release the track. The rest of them go way worse than that. So I'm trying to figure out. And if anyone wants to inbox me on my social media, I'd be happy to hear any suggestions. I'm trying to come up with an artful way to release something that's incredibly vulgar and spin it in such a way that I'm saying, well, technically, this is a liberty message. It's not 90s 2000s hip hop. It's like Eminem and Wu Tang playing Tupac. Like all of the words beat well. The words, what's that?
Put it on
iTunes.
What's
that? Put it
on iTunes. I am open to suggestions because I do think it would be cool to use it as like, hey, if we can raise a certain amount for the party, then I'll release another track later. And then I release the track and it's like, oh my god. It's a tough one. I remember, Obama would just release like what he'd been listening to for a month, and people would like hyper obsess about what the lyrics were for these songs. I'm like, yeah, that's hip hop music. But that's different than saying, hey, want to hear my remix? Like I said, I'm open to suggestions. If anyone wants to hit me up on social media with your suggestions, I'd be happy to hear them. But I don't be known as the guy who associated an entire political party with like the worst Eminem songs. Thank you for that.
Do you still listen to it? Do you still listen to the
mixtape? I've seen people listen to it in person, and I'm like, you can't tell anyone what's on it. They're like, oh, I see why you have to listen. I'm like, yeah, exactly. So.
All right, thanks, Mike, for everything. We appreciate it.
I would be more than happy to come there and meet so many crowds that you would
this summer holding you to us.
Thank you again, and hold me to it, guys. Thank you so much. I love all of you. Keep fighting for the liberty.